On the Voice of America. In today's show, Iran's top diplomat responds to a warning from U.S. Republican senators about the fate of any nuclear deal with the West. The former top diplomat of the U.S. answers critics of her decision to use private email for her diplomatic work. And a new U.N. report shows major improvements in global women's health. I'm Michael Lippin. Iran's foreign minister has strongly criticized a letter from a group of U.S. Republican senators warning his country that a possible deal with major world powers on the Iranian nuclear program could be revoked once President Barack Obama leaves office. Speaking Tuesday, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said the letter from the 47 U.S. lawmakers is unprecedented and undiplomatic and shows that Iran cannot trust the United States. The Republican senators oppose the deal Mr. Obama and the other world powers are trying to reach with Iran, fearing that it will eventually enable Iran to develop nuclear weapons. The lawmakers insist that Congress must approve the terms of any agreement. Mr. Obama also has criticized the senators' letter, accusing them of being in a coalition with Iranian conservatives who oppose nuclear concessions to the West. Iran has always said that its nuclear activities are peaceful. A top U.S. diplomat says Ukrainians in much of war-torn eastern Ukraine and Russian-occupied Crimea are living under a reign of terror fueled by an influx of Russian weapons. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland said Tuesday that Russian tanks, armored vehicles, and Russian artillery have poured into those regions in recent days in support of separatists loyal to Moscow. In remarks to U.S. lawmakers, Nuland also said the Obama administration has not yet decided whether to supply the Ukrainian government with defensive weaponry in its fight against those rebels. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has defended her controversial use of a private email account while serving as the nation's top diplomat. Speaking to reporters at the United Nations on Tuesday, she said it was a matter of convenience and did not violate any rules. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Clinton spoke to reporters at the United Nations where she had addressed a women's empowerment event. She said she chose to use her personal email account while Secretary of State to avoid having to carry two mobile phones, one for personal email and one for her official account.
Looking back, it would have been better if I'd simply used a second email account and carried a second phone, but at the time, this didn't seem like an issue.
The likely 2016 Democratic presidential contender has been under pressure to explain why she had a private email server installed in her home and carried out official government business through a private email account. Federal laws require government officials to preserve written communications involving official business. Clinton said she complied with every rule that applied to her job. Republicans allege that she avoided transparency and committed an ethical lapse. Analysts say it is too early to know whether the former Secretary of State will be politically damaged by the email controversy if she decides to run for president. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Tensions between the United States and Venezuela intensified on Tuesday, a day after Washington imposed sanctions on seven Venezuelan officials it accuses of corruption and rights abuses. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro criticized the measures as unjust and harmful. He also said he is seeking special legislative powers to confront what he labeled U.S. imperialism. Venezuelan ally Cuba also denounced the U.S. sanctions. Havana called the executive order by U.S. President Obama arbitrary and aggressive in an official statement published by a state-run newspaper. Iraqi forces have retaken a town near Tikrit as they advance in the second week of fighting for the Islamic State group-held city. A coalition of Iraqi troops and Shiite militiamen drove Islamic State fighters out of Al-Alam on Tuesday. Islamic State militants seized Tikrit, the capital of Saladin province, last June. Reclaiming that city, which is a geographic bridge between government-controlled Baghdad to the south and Islamic State-held Mosul to the north, would be a major victory for Iraq against the extremist group. Well, casualties are reported from an explosion on Tuesday in the Nigerian city of Maiduguri, 3 days after bomb blasts there killed more than 50 people. A reporter for VOA's Hausa service said the explosion hit the city's Monday Market area shortly after 4 p.m. local time. The reporter says a number of people were killed or injured by the blast, but Nigerian authorities have not yet released the casualty figures. The U.S. ambassador to South Korea, who was slashed in a knife attack last week, has been released from a Seoul hospital. Ambassador Mark Lippert spoke to reporters about his recovery on Tuesday.
You know, I feel pretty darn good, all things considered. I mean, it was obviously a scary incident, but I'm walking, talking, holding my baby, hugging my wife. So I just feel really good.
Well, Lippert needed 80 stitches to close a wound on the right side of his face following the attack, which was carried out by a North Korean sympathizer. The U.S. ambassador said his love and affection for South Korea was strengthened by the outpouring of support following that knife attack. He said he will return to work very soon. A UN-led initiative to improve health care for millions of poor women and children has attracted the participation of more than 300 governments, foundations, and businesses around the world. Major progress in the Every Woman, Every Child initiative was revealed in a report published by the World Body on Tuesday. VOA's George Putich has more.
Every Woman, Every Child, EWEC for short, was launched by United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon in 2010 to accelerate the progress towards achieving the Millennium Development Goals, or MDGs, for health. The movement's senior manager, Nana Kuo, says it has turned into the fastest-growing global public partnership in history.
It is estimated since 2010 that 2.4 million women and children's lives have been saved. The 2.4 million lives account for 120,000 women, 650,000 newborns, and 1.6 million children under five.
Kuo says initiatives towards reducing the death of newborns, family planning, improving adolescent health, and providing life-saving medicine and health services have been focused on the 49 low-income countries, and that improvement has been recorded in all of them. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
And before we go, Europe's euro currency tumbled again on Tuesday, falling to a 12-year low against the dollar. The single currency used in the 19-nation eurozone dropped to $1.07, its weakest point since April 2003. That's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin. If you'd like to reach me on Twitter, I'm at Michael_Lippin. See you later.
This is Asia Business News on The Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. European Union finance ministers gave France 2 more years on Tuesday to cut its budget deficit to within EU limits, extending the deadline for the third time since 2009 as Paris struggles to enact reforms. The Eurozone's second biggest economy has repeatedly missed deadlines and budget consolidation targets, and under EU budget rules sharpened during the sovereign debt crisis, was facing fines of up to 4 billion euros by late last year. EU finance ministers agreed that the details of a 315 billion euro investment plan on Tuesday to help revive the European economy without piling up more debt, and now aim to get the first projects going by the end of the year. EU lawmakers must now approve the fund. Some lawmakers are wary of favoritism toward Western European countries over poorer Eastern European members. Greek consumer prices fell 2.2% year-on-year in February, with the annual pace of deflation slowing from a 2.8% decline in January. That's according to data from the country's statistics service. Greece's EU-harmonized deflation rate also decelerated, showing prices fell by 1.9% in February, with a reading slower than an average forecast of a 2.6% drop in prices by economists polled by Reuters. For years an inflation outlier in the eurozone, Greece has been in deflation mode for the last 24 months as cuts in wages and pensions and a deep recession exerted downward pressures. Brent crude oil futures dipped below $58 a barrel on Tuesday as the dollar hit multi-year highs and the oil market remained hobbled by oversupply and also a weak demand. The U.S. dollar hitting a near 12-year peak against the euro. That's a look at business news on the Voice of America. Ireland had to rush through emergency legislation through Parliament Tuesday to make the possession of several drugs, including ecstasy, illegal, after a court ruled that the law controlling their use was unconstitutional. Ireland's Court of Appeal struck down part of a near 40-year-old law Tuesday, which meant that possession of several drugs, including ecstasy, immediately ceased to be an offense. The outcome of that case did not affect existing laws regarding the supply and possession of other drugs.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Thousands of people gathered in the small U.S. southern city of Selma, Alabama this past week to commemorate the 50th anniversary of an historic voting rights march. The 1965 event, known as Bloody Sunday, cast a spotlight on racial discrimination and the plight of millions of African Americans denied the right to vote in parts of the South. VOA's Chris Simpkins was there.
The vote is definitely more vulnerable than it has been since 1965. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Without the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Hank Sanders believes he would not be sitting in this chair.
And it's getting worse. Every time they try to find some new way to make it harder to vote rather than easier to vote.
The longtime Alabama state senator credits the voting power of blacks in the South for his string of successes at the ballot box. But 50 years later, he's worried about new efforts to restrict who can vote.
It's more than troubling to me. It's deeply painful. You know, anybody who was a part of the Voting Rights Act 50 years ago, we could not imagine that 50 years later we'd still be fighting for the right to vote.
50 years ago, history was made on this bridge. Now people in this community do not want the world to forget what happened here and never let it happen again.
We just have to fight in every way that we can to try to restore the Voting Rights Act. And we have to fight in every way we can to beat back these many and varied attacks on the right to vote.
Sanders says the violence of the 1960s is gone. He says the fight now is against new voter identification laws and a proposal to make residents prove their citizenship before they can register to vote.
Photo ID is just another kind of poll tax. The citizenship requirement in order to be registered is just another kind of literacy test. There are always different things that will be put in.
Longtime civil rights activists say they will do everything they can to overturn restrictive voting laws, restore the full Voting Rights Act, and battle against further efforts on the right to vote. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Montgomery, Alabama.
The world around us is in constant motion, even objects that seem to be perfectly still. Researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology use a special camera that offers glimpses into the world of seemingly invisible movements. VOA's George Putich joins us in the cafe with that.
Many objects around us vibrate, but the movements are invisible to the naked eye. For instance, a wine glass exposed to a loud noise vibrates, although it looks perfectly still. However, if you tape the movements with a special high-speed camera that records thousands of frames per second and use a computer program to amplify the vibrations and insert them in the video, the results are stunning. The so-called motion microscope makes the glass look like it's made of a jelly-like substance.
The motion microscope is a way to visualize small motions that are seemingly invisible to the naked eye in videos.
Massachusetts Institute of Technology graduate student Neil Wadhwa recorded and amplified the movements of a face, clearly showing the man's blood pressure going up and down with every heartbeat. Wadhwa says the motion microscope can be very useful for monitoring critical movements, such as the movements of a baby in mother's womb or of an infant breathing.
You could create a non-contact vital signs monitor, so you don't have to attach anything to a person. You'll still be able to figure out their heart rate and their respiration rate.
George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
The cafe is open every day. Your entry is via voanews.com and many podcast platforms. I'm Ira Melman.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Do you ever get a food craving? Maybe for chocolate or something salty or something crunchy? Well, it turns out it could be more than just appetite. A new exhibition at Britain's Science Museum has people sucking on electric lollipops and tasting a sweet, sugary taste, even though there's no sugar there. Another part of the exhibit has a mechanical model of our digestive system, showing how bacteria dissolve our food and what role good bacteria play in keeping us healthy. For the electric lollipop, a current is sent from a small circuit board and delivers a flavor to your tongue, sweet, sour, salty, or bitter. The electric lollipop was designed by City University's Mixed Reality Laboratory. Emma Zhang is a PhD candidate at City University in London.
If we also can generate a sweet taste by actually not eating real sugar, and it will be beneficial for patients with diabetes, for example, because they're not being able to, they can't take in sugar. So right now we have artificial sweetener, but what this will do is it will give you a sweet taste. So we want to actually make this into the shape of a utensil. So, for example, a shape of a spoon. So you can use this metallic spoon and you put it in your mouth and you will be able to have a sweet taste when you're just eating something very bland.
The electric lollipop is just one of several designs that scientists are using to understand our cravings. The exhibit highlights the way that scientists hope to fight obesity. One weapon in that fight could be Professor Glenn Gibson's model of the large intestine. Gibson and his team at the University of Reading want to understand how the intestine works and what role bacteria play in digesting food and in controlling appetite.
They digest typically about 200 grams of food, which an adult would eat every day, and there are various positive or negative consequences for health as a result of that. The good thing is we know we can change our gut bacteria, we can change the composition of them, the makeup of them, and so if we begin to understand the ones which are negative for health, we can begin to subvert them and boost the ones which are more friendly to us.
Scientists hope to develop a so-called gut messenger that will make people feel more satisfied even when they don't eat as much. And how can we eat? No, 3, 2, 1. How we eat can also affect whether we feel satisfied. Andreas Fabian is a silversmith and a lecturer at the University of New Buckinghamshire. He says design of our tools that we use to eat is important to taste and to feeling satisfied.
It's making dining just much more pleasurable. Because we feel that our current traditional cutlery is moving us away from the food rather than adding to the pleasure of eating. You know, the handles on cutlery got longer and longer. When you think about little teacups, there's a little hand there, you put your little finger up, there's no connection to it anymore, no connection to texture, surface, weight, temperature, and all these things.
Fabian says a handheld bowl can help encourage us to eat less. The utensils we use can change our perception of eating. A silver cup could make us feel more like we're drinking out of our hands because the metal conducts temperature well. Smell and taste work together to trigger our sense of pleasure when we eat. This exhibit also asks guests to smell different scents inside a set of bottles. Ling Li is the exhibit curator. She says that the cravings exhibit aims to highlight the relationship between taste, smell, texture, and appetite.
When you think about appetite, the regulation of it happens in our brains, but it also happens in our guts. And within our gut bacteria also contribute to that story. This conversation or negotiation between all of our appetite-regulating senses, that is what we're really trying to communicate with this exhibition.
Cravings will continue at London Science Museum until January of next year. So what about you? Did you think there might be a relationship between the spoon you eat with and how satisfied you are with your meal? What about those cravings you get right before bed? Well, let us know what you think by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
Pope Francis is to visit Philadelphia later this year, and in the city, part of the proceeds from the sales of hashtag Pope and Philly milkshakes will benefit two upcoming events there, a world gathering of Catholic families and, of course, the Pope's visit. The winning flavor from three choices was selected Monday by the Archbishop of Philadelphia. The shake is a blend of vanilla ice cream and shortbread cookies. The Pope will also be visiting New York and Washington, D.C. No word yet if those cities will have a drink of their own to mark the occasion. It's sports time on The Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. Investigators Tuesday recovered all 10 bodies from a remote site in Argentina where helicopters serving a reality TV show apparently collided, killing prominent French athletes and leaving the European nation in mourning. The helicopters crashed Monday afternoon near Via Castelli, about 1,170 kilometers northwest of Buenos Aires. All aboard, including eight French nationals and two Argentine pilots, were killed. Among the dead, Olympic champion swimmer Camille Moffett, Olympic boxer and bronze medalist Alexis Vastine, and pioneering sailor Florence Artaud. They had been among the contestants in the reality TV show titled Dropped. The bodies were being transported to the regional capital of La Rioja province, where autopsies would be conducted. The rough terrain made recovering them late Monday impossible. Television images showed investigators pulling cell phones, papers, and other charred, unrecognizable items from the wreckage in dry scrubland of a sparsely populated area along the Andes mountain range that separates Argentina and Chile. Here in the United States, the Kentucky Wildcats have the chance to reach heights that no team in the program's history has ever achieved. That is, becoming undefeated national champions. Losing seems to be unthinkable, but on the other hand, a loss in this week's Southeastern Conference tournament might not be the worst thing in the world for the top-ranked Wildcats. Kentucky coach John Calipari seems unfazed by the prospect of a conference tournament loss, as long as it's the last one his team suffers in pursuit of national championship number 9. This week, he says, has no bearing on where we're going to be seated. As he told a SEC coaches teleconference, the most important thing, Calipari said, for us is to be the best team and the last team standing. Kentucky, currently with a record of 31-0, has shown resiliency after a conference tournament loss, the program's last national title in 2012, followed a loss in the conference championship game to Vanderbilt. Losing to Florida in last year's SEC final ended up spurring the Wildcats' run to the NCAA finals. And it's just about time to start looking over the playoff picture in the National Basketball Association. We'll have more on that in the coming days. That's sports on VOA.
In popular music, there is a growing genre, cover versions or cover songs, often simply called covers. They're new performances or recordings of previously recorded commercially released songs by someone other than the original artist. At one time, cover songs had a negative connotation. They were seen as songs performed by less talented and successful acts who actually were stealing the superior work of the composer to make quick money. But these days, they are typically recognized as one artist paying homage to another in a show of admiration.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
Daniela Andrade is a YouTube sensation, singing many covers, including Gnarls Barkley's Crazy. The Edmonton, Alberta singer-songwriter has millions of internet fans who fill theaters all over the world when she comes to perform, doing covers often opening the door to Andrade's own songs, which are popular downloads on music websites.
Does that make me crazy?
Boyce Avenue is another internet group known for their covers. Three brothers from Sarasota, Florida, formed the band and performed to sell-out concerts all the time. Here they sing Tracy Chapman's hit Fast Car, featuring Alejandro Manzano and Kina Granis.
You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. I work at the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs.
So I remember we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belong. And I had a feeling I could be someone.
And then there's Sarah Nimitz breaking all records on YouTube, singing songs like this cover of Adele's Rolling in the Deep.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I could see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out and I'll lay your shit bare. See how I leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. Cause there's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch and it's bringing me out the dark. The scars of your love remind me of us. They keep me thinking that we almost had it all.
That's music on VOA Global. I'm Steve Norman.
Well, I'm sure we've all had our tough days and our tough weeks, and the same is true for countries. Romania has had a rather difficult week. The foreign minister, Bogdan Aurescu, has apologized to his visiting German counterpart for handing him a booklet during a televised news conference that happened to mix up a map of Germany with one of France on the cover. Frank-Walter Steinmeier paid a one-day visit to Romania on Monday to hold talks on bilateral relations, NATO, East Ukraine, and to mark the 135 years of diplomatic relations between Romania and Germany. Romania's foreign ministry later said in a statement, due to a regrettable technical error exclusively on the cover of the booklet, the border of the maps of Romania and France, with the latter being covered by the German flag, was printed. The Romanian foreign minister has directly conveyed a profound regret for the situation to his German counterpart. Well, let's be fair, just about every nation has at one time or another endured an embarrassing diplomatic mistake. But for Romania, this is the second time in just over a month that its foreign ministry has had to apologize. Back in February, the Romanian embassy in Paris had sent out invitations for a reception and accidentally attached a spreadsheet with them, containing unflattering descriptions of guests, such as undesirable or ghastly. Well, we certainly think all of you are very desirable, and we thank you for joining us today at VOA Global. And we also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, and our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We send the invitation out to you to join us again tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global.